All right.
Join Tim and Christina Madden, co-founders of Executive Career Upgrades, on their podcast, The Executive Career Upgrades Podcast. As an executive in today's highly competitive job market, it can be tough to succeed. However, with Tim's nationally recognized career advice and Christina's mindset expertise, you can reach your full potential. Tune in to upgrade your career and get ahead of the competition.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Executive Career Upgrades Podcast. We were just talking about this, episode 127. Still can't believe it. We just show up week over week, and before you know it, we're at episode 127. You guys, if you're listening over in the Executive Career Network, I cannot believe I checked this morning, 15,000 members. I have officially lost count. You guys are killing it over there. If you're listening over there, be sure to drop us a comment, say hello. And as you'll see here over to the side, I have Miss Kelly Garrett joining us today. I'm super excited about this. I met her over the summer. We were speaking at a entrepreneurial event. And you know, Kelly, it's funny. I was laughing last night. I still think about this because when the event kicked off, it went into a very like emotional sort of state. And Kelly was like, man, I don't know. This is getting a little kumbaya for me. And so that's really funny. And so we get to talk to her about her success, her mindset. You guys might have seen on some of the content out there, four-time All-American women's basketball player. So obviously has achieved a lot personally, professionally, and financially. So I'm excited to ask her some questions that I didn't get to in the summer. And we'll just have some fun along the way. So thank you for being with us, Kelly. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you so much, Christina. I'm honored to be here. Thank you for asking me to get on. So, yeah, it was nice meeting you and Tim, getting to know you guys a lot better during that time. Yeah, that event started off really mushy, and I'm not really a mushy type, kumbaya type of girl. And so I had to say it. I probably hurt some feelings, but it just was what I was feeling at the time.
That was just so funny. So, so funny. But we had a great weekend there. And Kelly put on an awesome talk about world-class elite performance and what separates people from, you know, that category. And so I have some questions for her about that. We'll just dive right in. And guys, don't mind me if I'm looking down at my notes. That's to keep me on track with these questions that I prepared today. So listen, I want to get into some things about success and leadership. And are you, Kelly, are you getting feedback from me right now?
I am not.
All right. I better turn down my volume here a little bit. Bear with me, guys. I don't have Mr. Tim Madden, my co-host here, to monitor all this for me today. But success and leadership and what you've done across your career to hit these goals that, you know, some only can dream of. I mean, you've just really crushed it. So let's get into it. We know you talk a lot about success and how much it truly demands from us. And I think sometimes people think, wow, Christina, you've achieved so much. But like, I've just now begun to just crack the surface a little bit, or tip of the iceberg, should you say, on like what success really demands from us. And I've, you know, I'm trying to come to grips with what that means, how much you have to sacrifice, and what that looks like. And am I willing to do it? You know, it's a tough question once you start ascending in your life. But why do you think so many people struggle with understanding this? And for our listeners out there, most of our listeners come to us wanting to pursue some really high level career goals, you know, high paid positions in the multiple six figures, and really grow to really heightened levels of success, but they seem to be really disconnected with what it takes. And that's okay. It's a difficult thing to really understand in the beginning, but why do you think people just don't get that sometimes?
It's so true, because I just see it so many different times that we forget to work, and we forget to work hard. That, you know, these days, I think, you know, my come up, we didn't have social media, so I didn't see it so quickly. And so all I knew and where I came from was, you know, small rural area of South Carolina, and I saw hard work every day. So now I saw it on a small scale, smaller scale, maybe financially, or the numbers that maybe somebody was going after. However, I saw hard work every day. And I just think that because today we have so much instant gratification and we see somebody else doing it at 25, or they think they're doing it at 25 years old, because it's so exploited, if you will, on social media. So I just think that we got to retrain people and remind younger entrepreneurs coming through, or younger executives coming through, that they got to work hard. And, you know, having the dad or the mom home every night at 4:30 doesn't work at all times, right? And so, and that's okay. I feel like we're getting, and then we'll go back to kumbaya. I think we get a little kumbaya-ish of that. You can have everything and still, you know, work 4 hours. You know, the Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week, while I'm not sure that book exactly says that specifically, it was a great label or book name, if you will, to come out to grab somebody's attention, because people really want to make a lot of money in just 4 hours a week. I haven't figured out how to do that. I don't think the elite class achievers have figured that out, nor do they want to do that. I think it's okay to want to work and to want to work hard to be able to get to that success level that you personally want. If your goal is high achievers, world-class elite or elite in general, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of pain and it's a lot of commitment.
That's right. And you guys might see some of these like life coaches and gurus out there that are driving Lamborghinis and they have this product and that product. And there's a lot of narrative out there that says that things can be, a lot of money can be made by working a short period of time. I know I definitely have not figured that out. If somebody does figure that out, please let me know. But then also the second part of what Kelly said was that it's okay to work a lot. You know, nobody doing better than me has ever said, you know, slow down, work less. I mean, it just doesn't happen. So for you guys out there listening, and Kelly made it, we were talking about, hey, when you start doing podcasts like this and lives online, you can't get your feelings hurt in the beginning because you only have a few viewers. So you got to work hard, and you definitely can't get your feelings hurt in the beginning when things aren't going your way. So love that. Very, very, very good points. What would you say is something that success has demanded from you that you didn't see coming? For me, it's been much more of a sacrifice time wise for me. I mean, this is like giving up your 9 to 5 to work 24/7, I guess you can say. But what's something that stands out to you that's been like painful or sacrificial for you?
You know, going back to what I said earlier about, it's not the hours that I work on a weekly basis. I've learned to not have work-life balance. I have work-life harmony. So, you know, we're going,
love that,
we're leaving Thursday or Friday morning and, you know, flying to the Bahamas for about 4 days. And I'll work when I'm down there. You know, I'll also be by the pool. I'll also be on a podcast that Friday afternoon. So, but why is that bad? Right. I don't want to have to disconnect from everything. Now if I need to disconnect, meaning if it just gets too wild and I believe in that, you know, I believe in sprinting instead of like having, I've been in business for self-employed now for 25 years. So I can't sprint the entire 25 years, but I like to sprint and then rest, gather my thoughts, read a book, get another idea, and go back out and sprint again. But sacrifice, I'm not sure that I did it. I might have sacrificed my time with my spouse. And at the beginning, we not that we weren't on the same page, but I don't think she understood what it took, because she doesn't have that drive that I have. Right. And so maybe that was it, sacrificing a little bit on her side, meaning that I had to, I'm having to come halfway with her for her to understand that in order for us to have all this and for me to be happy and to give her everything of me, then I need to work, and I need to work a lot. And I need to have big goals, and I need to, I'll never be satisfied. And that's gotta be okay with her. So maybe that I'm going to chalk that up more on my personal life, that I've had to sacrifice more so than anything else or anywhere else.
I love that. People are always asking Christina about work-life balance. And I was like, I'm so sorry to just tell you, I don't believe in that, but I've already tried it. It just, and plus that word balance, it feels like there's so much pressure there. You got to just be perfectly doing both of those two things, work and life. And so I love the word harmony that you brought into that. I've never used that. So for our listeners out there, there's only so many beaches you can sit on in isolation. I've done that so many times that now I almost prefer, unless I'm super burnout or whatever, like Kelly said, if you really need to disconnect, but I really would prefer to be contributing in some way in harmony with my relaxation. So I love that tip. So anybody listening, like you can do both. And I know, a lot of our listeners are not entrepreneurs, but a lot of you are consulting. A lot of you are in the remote world, and a lot of you have a high level of autonomy with your life. So where in your life can you bring work and life into harmony and feel really good about it? And a lot of times spouses and partners don't understand that, but it is, you know, possible to get on the same page and both be willing to sacrifice some time, especially in the beginning of certain things, and things have seasons, but where can you sacrifice to both be mission driven? What is the mission? What's the life mission, and where can you sacrifice to get that? So great points. Okay. So we know you're a baller, like financially, and I want to get into some of that. She's achieved some amazing things with her, lending company, but I wanted to talk about this basketball thing for a second because, now guys, don't judge me. I honestly, okay, 4-time All-American women's basketball player. We know that. I honestly did not know exactly what that meant. I know it means something really amazing. It's a huge honor, huge achievement, but I didn't know the measurables with it. So the point system, you got to break this down for me. Like how is this actually determined?
Well, in any conference, I played basketball at a mid-major D1 school called the College of Charleston. And it's measured in your conference or in the NCAA, if you will, of other people, of other schools in that arena, right? And so you might be first team, second team, third team All-American. It's very hard to get it because it's hard to get it 4 times. It's hard to get it your freshman year, I have to say. And when I came in my freshman year, I was playing, I started, but I was playing with a Naismith All-American, and that's another class. And so I played, so she had the team, if you will. And so, you know, I was a shooter. She was a, inside player. So we worked well together and won a lot of games, but it's very hard to do. And, I don't know that I went after that. I went after goals, and I was very goal oriented as a kid. You know, back in the day, again, no social media, no internet, none of that. We had these books about that when you're getting recruited, people will send them to you about the history of the college that they're after you for or what have you. And so I look back and I wanted to see how many points the most points were scored at the place that I chose. And so that was my goal. I wanted to score more points than any woman's ever scored. I did it. I knew that I could because that's my gift. That's my talent. I'm a distributor, assist and points. And so I went after that goal, and I hope my team didn't feel selfish. They never come back to me and said that I was being selfish. They liked it. You know, if I can score a lot of points, we can win a lot of games. And so, I've scored more points there than any woman's ever scored. Still stands to the day. you know, what, I've been out of school now 34 years. And so it still stands, and very honored to be in the Hall of Fame there and in my high school. And more so than anything, I think these days, what I'm so proud of, if you will, because I get to see it, right? I get to see it when I walk into our gym and watch. We still hold season tickets for the men and women's games, and I get to see my jersey hang in the rafters. It means a lot because, you know, I put a lot of effort. I put a lot of commitment. You're talking about success demands a lot from you. That it's a lot. It's a lot to put all that out. But it was a burn in my belly, right? It was a passion that I had. That was my identity for many, many, many years up until probably my 30s, probably, because, you know, I played other things after that. And unfortunately, there just wasn't the WNBA and there wasn't a lot to go. There was places to play overseas, but I chose not to go there just because the pay was terrible and it was just a very different game. But how awesome is it to see right now that women's basketball have been elevated and people are watching? And, you know, girl dads are so, that's cool to be a girl dad. And, you know, it's just great for women in general and women's sports. And the sports and basketball specifically, because my dad was very hardcore and he told us all three of us, he said, pick one thing and get really good at it. I'm not going to drive you around to four different like events, right? It's just, he was hard. And so my brother was a golf pro and, I did pretty well in basketball. And my sister got real good at being a mom. And so she had a bunch of babies and, is now a school teacher giving back as well. So, we got pretty good at what he told us to do and enjoyed it. Grew up in a real small rural community cause we didn't have a lot to do. So, we just got really good at our craft.
I guess you did get really good at your craft, but how cool is it you got to contribute to the growth of women's sports? I mean, I can just only imagine when you walk in there and you see your jersey up there, that's just so stinking awesome.
Yeah, it's very gratifying.
This might be like a really cheesy question, but is there an athlete that you really like look up to in just not only sports, but life?
No, I don't think it's cheesy. I think growing up, like I said, we weren't able to turn on the TV and see a woman playing sports. It just wasn't around. I was born in 1967. I'm 56 years old. It just didn't happen. I mean, heck, Title IX didn't happen till 70s. If I can remember, I think it's 50 years old right now. And that was a big differential of women's sports versus men's sports in colleges, being able to have, scholarships for women versus men. So I was going to school in 1986. And again, no women at that time that I could even know to look up to. So I picked, I don't know if I did, you know, for whatever reason, Larry Bird, I play like him. I got probably the same type of hair like him. We came from the same, just podunk area of, he came from Podunk, Indiana, and I came from Podunk, South Carolina. I just gravitated toward him and his play. So Larry Bird was physically what I was after on the basketball court. Now, later on in life, I have to say, after reading multiple books by Tim Grover, who was the personal coach, physical coach for Kobe, for MJ, for Dwayne Wade, just multiple different high-class athletes. And so I respect Kobe's and MJ's just their delivery and their, I guess, their real estate between their ears. That's what I really sought after because I could really understand what it took to be a world-class athlete. And I wanted to take that into business. So I knew that as an athlete, I needed to have from my neck down a lot going on, right, physically. But when I pivoted into business, a lot more has to go on between my ears. And that would be confidence, just unfathomable work ethic, everything else, because my body had gotten me, a long way with basketball, but my body wasn't going to get me a long way in business. And so I really studied MJ's work ethic and Kobe's work ethic, as well as their commitment. And they were just odd, right? They were odd souls. And it stuck out, because if the Lakers are practicing two-a-days, let's say, Kobe practiced another practice at 4 a.m. So if they were going to practice at 8, he got up at 4 and had another practice in by himself. So that gave him 300 or 400 more reps or more shots. So if he did that every single week for 20 years, the amount of time he played, he probably got hundreds of thousands of more shots in and reps in, which makes him even better and even better. So just one more practice, one more watching film, one more X. So I'm going to call Kobe and MJ, because Kobe followed MJ, and MJ is the GOAT. And Tim Grover, he wrote the book Relentless, and that just stuck with me. That book that he wrote about just seeing what the world-class elite athletes go through. And I'm not talking about just physically demanding. I'm talking about mentally demanding. And I wanted to have that. I really want to have that mental toughness that's going to carry me into this other world of business. And so that I'm comfortable there. Comfortable is a good word when you're trying to be not too comfortable, but I wanted to be okay playing in this 8-figure, you know, world and with confidence.
100%. And Kobe is absolutely fascinating. You guys, if you haven't heard his recent podcast with Jay Shetty, you've got to go take a listen. Wow, what an emotionally intelligent genius. But we just listened to some of the great athletes at GrowthCon. So there was Tyson, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Actually, if you didn't catch Grover's speech there, you might be able to download that. Incredible. Ray Lewis was there, Peyton Manning, and they all have a few things in common. I mean, they have a lot in common, but it boils down to a few things when it comes to success. And that's the mindset. Kelly's talking about the practice, so repetition, and then just obsession beyond imagine. So, I'm assuming that's how you felt about basketball, and that's not how you feel about business. That's why we take our clients through the repetition of networking and interviewing so often and practicing. And our sales reps, we don't practice on our clients. We practice and get those repetitions and constantly training. But guys, those three things, that's what they talk about. Every time you're interviewing them, it's not, you're waiting for some magical like bomb to fall out of the sky that they're going to say that's just going to change your life. But it comes down to mindset, confidence, repetition, and obsession. I mean, do you agree, Kelly, that that's the formula?
You know, the consistency that you're talking about and showing back up here, showing back up in all your education that you guys provide, it's just like reps working out, or it's just like reps in anything. You just have to keep showing up. And we talk about this so much that the networking piece, let's go back to networking, right? And that's the only thing I can go back and really hang my hat on success for, is that my currency is relationships. And that doesn't mean just one relationship that I met 20 years ago. Oh, by the way, I might see them every 10 years or 5 years. No, we network monthly. We network weekly. Sometimes it's multiple times a day that we network. And that's just showing up over and over again. I had a loan officer that was talking to me and saying, well, Kelly, I drove 3 hours to Raleigh, and I didn't even leave with a loan. I said, it's okay. It's okay. That person heard you, and you're going to show up next month at the same real estate investment group, and you're going to show up the following month, and we're going to show up the following month, and we're going to show up every single month for as long as you work here. Because they're going to see you, because that's what's missing, is that, let's just say that we sponsor, Rehab Wallet is the name of our lending company. And let's say that we sponsor a real estate investment group. And let's say there's five other sponsors there. I promise you that we're there every single time the doors open. And one sponsor might show up maybe once every other month or every third month. And I can see, well, he's not there today. Oh, he's not there. Oh, she's not there this month. But we're there every single month. And that consistency is just the easy thing. You don't have to be super smart. You just have to show up. We just have to work hard. You have to drive the distance and be there. And that consistency is just missing. And it's so easy to do. It's the easiest thing that I've ever done. And talk to people. Go have a drink with somebody. You eating dinner. And if that's all you have to do, and then because people want to invest with us or invest with you or invest their time with you if they know, like, and trust you, right? And they're not going to, they might get to know you over social media. They might kind of like you over social media, but the trust comes when you're constantly networking and constantly creating those relationships.
Know, like, and trust.
No.
Love that.
Know, like, and trust.
Guys, let's just pause here for a second. She's talking about networking of all kinds. Well, she's talking about her business right now. But this is the kind of network that we talk to you guys about all the time, staying connected to decision makers in your field, staying relevant in your industry, putting yourself out there, publishing that content. These things kind of fall on the bottom of the list of things I love to do, but they are the most fruitful things that you can do for the longevity of your career. It's not just about, hey, Christina, I got to get the job. Who can I connect with? Just be done with it. No, you need to be widely known at the director, VP, and executive level for the life of your career. You don't know when there's going to be a reduction in force. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if you're going to change your mind. Do you want to go be a consultant? How are you going to land high-paying clients? Having a fruitful network is highly underrated. And guys, also, I'm just going to add, and I think Kelly agrees with me here because we talked about this in Hilton Head. I'm not even that big of a people person. I'm just going to be honest. I'm not putting myself out there to just be like, go play games. I'm putting myself out there. I have really strong boundaries in terms of how I frame out my communication. What's the objective? What's the target? That's how I build my network. Kelly, do you want to add to that?
No, it's true. I mean, do I want to? I'm leaving tomorrow morning to go, 4 days to go. I told y'all, I think I said this, but that we're going to the Bahamas for 4 days. I'm just going to just go relax a little bit and work. But I can go into a networking event tonight, right? And I don't really want to go. But I'm going. There might be seven people there. It's a women's group for a very large real estate investment group that I started here 5 years ago. And I got to show up. I got to shake hands. It's from 6 to 8. We'll have dinner there. I'll come up. So what else am I going to be doing from 6 to 8 tonight, right? And so I just got to keep showing up. This morning, just ran back in here, took a shower, put on a cute little shirt. Not that cute, but just a shirt. And because I just got back from working out, I did not want to go to work out at 10 o'clock with this trainer that whoops my behind every single time I go. But you got to show up if you want to, have a certain body, if you want to have the right mindset, if you want to, you just got to keep going. If you want to have a business that's big enough, you got to, especially us leaders, we have to shake hands and let them see us out. We got to do the right thing. We got to not be stupid on social media for them to, if they're going to know, like, and trust us. I keep doing this because it's a pyramid that I draw out so many times, is that, they're going to trust you because you're not, looking like an idiot on social media. Right. And so they're investing. We have raised $160 million in the last 4 years. They do not need to see somebody crazy on social media. They wouldn't be invested with us. And so if I'm going to be the face of Rehab Wallet, they got to know somebody that's going to work hard, be good stewards of their money, not sit back and, show that I'm not working but 4 hours a week. They wouldn't be investing with us. And so I think we got to be out and about consistently growing our relationships face to face at times as much as we can.
Absolutely. Grant Cardone's number one rule of success, I believe it's in the 10X rules, show up. Like, what a concept. Like, we have to show up. You got to kind of decide what it is you're going to do, who you're going to be, and begin showing up and acting as that person. Even if you're not hitting your targets right away, guys, we got to show up. We got to show up.
And it might not happen on that first event. Like I said, I was using that example of the loan officer. Kelly, I didn't get a loan. I don't care. You know, I think we talked about this, you know, so many times we've been on social media at the very beginning on our come up, and it's like nobody watched our video. Zip. It's okay. You got
okay.
Up in your place, broadcasting room, and do it the next week, maybe twice that next week. And you just do it over and over and over again. I'm talking about for decades. That's what we got to do. And I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. If you want to be elite, if you want to be average, and I think that I've shared this at that other event, is that, you know, on a spectrum, there's people over here that are just okay and have given up. They just getting through life one day at a time, and they've pretty much given up on their bodies and their minds and everything, right? And then you have this other huge group of people, and that's typically the average group in everything. Average spouse, average mom, average provider, average business leader, everything, just average. And then there's one more little step out here that's elite. And then there's one further than elite that's world-class elite. Right. And so I don't want to be average. I ain't gonna stay there. My team's not gonna stay there. We're not gonna stay in this average. It's where everybody else is at. I want to go over here and make sure that we stay in this elite group, maybe even world class elite, but definitely in the elite group.
I recently heard, who was it? The twins that played tennis. I think it was Serena Williams. She said something along the lines of discipline equals freedom. And I think, and I just love that, because it's hard to have discipline. It's hard to work out. It's hard to show up. It's hard to have repetition, but the freedom that comes along with that, it's so hard to fully understand until you're in it and you keep going. Really is a fascinating concept. So I understand. So you spent 12 years in corporate. And tell me a little bit about that. So Fortune 500 company, you quickly moved up to then managing over 1,000 people. What sort of was, it's cheesy. This is such a cheesy way to say it. I always have like cheesy. What was kind of like your leadership style when you were overseeing like 1,000 plus employees?
So right after college, let's go back. I there was a career day, and I went right. I went toward the hard work area, blue collar stuff, because at this point I hadn't really gotten my mind right around where I was headed, or hadn't met anybody, hadn't met, you know, Grant. I met Grant online probably about 2012, and people like that, right? I just didn't know anybody. So I just went toward I knew how to do, and that was hard work. So I went to UPS. There was a UPS table. Started working that next day, day after I graduated. And so I had an education, but I was loading trucks at 4 in the morning, from 4 to 9 in the morning. That's the way you start there. Even the board of directors started somewhere in the lower levels of UPS.
Oh, wow.
Then after I loaded for about a year, then it's a union type of work. And then I was able to drive, because that's the step. You load, then you drive, and then you can go in management if you have a degree. And so that was where I knew that was the step. So that's where I was headed. So I loaded, and I was the best loader. You know, I didn't know any better. I just worked hard, and I was like, give me another truck. This is boring. Give me another truck. So I was loading 4 and 5 trucks at a time. And they saw that. Again, all I had to do was show up, say, yes, I'll take another truck. Hey, yes, I work hard. All I had to do was work for 5 hours a day. I had to, of course, had to have another job after that to you know, pay my bills and so forth. But then I drove. And then I was the best driver in, you know, tried to be the best driver in the center. So then they came after me to be a management person. And now I'm training drivers. And that was the first step of being a supervisor. Well, the next step is to be a manager over the supervisors, and the supervisors manage the drivers. So I did that. You know, that's what I wanted to do. And I knew that I could manage it. Okay. So now I'm a division manager over managers and supervisors of multiple centers all over New Jersey. And my style is this. My style to this day is recruit and bring people in that are a heck of a lot smarter than I am, and not lose anything in my confidence because somebody is a ton smarter than me. I'm not the smartest, sharpest tool in the shed. I'm just not. But I'll outwork anybody. And I don't mean that as being cocky. I just hung my hat on that for years. So they knew that about me. I was always the first one in, last one to leave. That's how I knew how to manage back then. And so, and then I just treat them fairly, but I would recruit 8 out of 10 employees back then, 8 to 9 out of 10. The 10 out of 10s are not working at UPS. They're working at Goldman or somewhere. And I just would try to recruit.
I don't want to totally interrupt you, but I want to ask you a quick question. So would you agree that right now, and I always tell people this, it's just my opinion, but it seems pretty easy to like outwork people right now. If you show up and you repeat and you're working, you're outworking people. Like, it's pretty easy to do right now. Do you agree with that?
It's the missing denominator. It's the missing thing. When somebody treats you well, my trainer today, I'm not kidding you, I left with a letter in my hand as I was leaving because we trade out. I give him real estate advice. He's 25-year-old, just amazing in the gym. But I give him real estate advice. But he gave me a letter today and said how much he appreciated me helping him, and I've changed his life. Wow. That is just abnormal. Nobody writes a letter to anybody these days and says, thank you. Wow. And that means a lot. And so that's just and see how easy that is? But why don't we take the time to do that? And why don't we just take the time, like you said, to show up or to say thank you or to go over and beyond at your job? If you're on the rise and trying to be that executive, that all I had to say was bring me another truck and let me see if I can load 5 at a time. I bet you I can. And at the same time, I'm using it as a workout. But that little bit of thing, because everybody else is saying, shit, take that truck off me. This is too hard. And I'm the other one saying, I'll take that truck. Give it to me. And that I didn't even know what I was doing, but that little bit of a thing helped me to then move up in all these levels at UPS to be able to get to a certain point. Of course, once I got to that division level, I had to manage a group of people. I couldn't rely on my back anymore. I had to, and that's a paradigm shift. That's a shift for somebody that's a doer. So then I started recruiting people like me. I only wanted people like me and that were hard workers, but smarter than I was. And so it's difficult to manage that many people, but you got to remember you got employees and you got union people at that time that are complete jerks. Some of them are just jerks. And, I'm going to go back to sports. It helped me. That helped me so much being able to deal with that when they come at you and you know, defeat comes at you and you got to learn how to deal with it or lay down and cry. And I have to say, I'm going to go way back. I have to say that you girl dads and moms, don't coddle the girl. Don't coddle the little girl. We're not doing them any favors because I was one of maybe 10 women in the country that was at that level at UPS. It's very difficult if I was coddled as a little girl to walk in that executive boardroom with confidence, it would be very, I would have crashed early on in my career. Had my dad and mom coddled me like we do little girls sometimes. Right.
I think there is like such a coddle culture going on. Yeah. When I think, and I'm no parenting expert, guys. I do have a son, but I'm no parenting expert. But just a matter of setting goals and really clear targets for your child and having open communication is one way to just have a more clear path toward achievements and the way that we handle ourselves and all of that. Recruiting. So, you know, I talk to a lot of business owners, a lot of corporate leaders, and you always, when you ask people, hey, what's your biggest pain point? It's always, can't find good people. Where are the good people? What do you think? Like, why do you think attracting, hiring, and retaining people is so hard for most organizations?
The 10 out of 10s or 9 out of 10s, and that's just that's what I call them. They want to work for something that's going to keep them interested. They want to work for a big enough company. I've just learned that the bigger we get, the easier it is to recruit talent. The more that I express to them and show them our vision of where we're headed, you know, we'll do, as of, you know, 4 years, we've done over $250 million in loans. If I was just doing a third of that or a quarter of that, it would be interesting for those 8 out of 10s. The 6s are okay. The 6s are fine working and just collecting a paycheck and moving on. The 8 out of 10s, they're asking me like, you know, let's grow, because they're going to get a bonus based on our bottom line. And at the same time, that bonus is one thing. But the overachievers, sometimes at the corporate level, they need to be challenged. Give them the work. Load them up. They will tell you when it's too much, but probably not. They're probably going to tell you like what I said about, and I'm sure you did it too, Christina, like in my example, give me another truck. The 8 out of 10 will say to the originators, bring some volume in. If the 8 out of 10 is a processor, hey guys, bring me some work. Bring me some work. What are y'all doing? And challenging the next department that needs to go get the loans to bring it in to the next level, which is the processor. So my processor is a true 8, 9 out of 10. And so are my originators. But they challenge each other. Like, I'm bored of tears. Bring it on. Or instead of like, you know, just sitting back collecting their salary and not, because those high level people need to be challenged. Let's challenge them. Let's challenge them and load them up with work. And I mean that in a positive thing, because number one, that's job security for them. Number two, it helps our bottom line that then we can then bonus them off of. And then three, they're challenged.
You know, the clients that come to us to work with us, they're burnout in corporate, and they're looking to target some of the best organizations in the world. And what we know and what you know, Kelly, is that what creates that is culture. So vision, a clear path of where the company's going. How can the organization serve as a true vehicle to reach, you know, your personal, at the end of the day, people only want to reach their targets personally, professionally, financially. So how can we use the business or the career as a vehicle to do that? So as leaders, sometimes we have to have a hard conversation with ourselves. If you're losing people left and right, if it's a toxic work culture, if everything's falling apart, it's likely our fault that we're not creating a clear, exciting path that 10 out of 10s or 8 out of 10s can really get behind and help accelerate everyone's growth. Side note, while I'm on that topic, next Thursday, Tim and I are doing a virtual leadership necessities workshop. I said next Thursday, right? 12 p.m. Eastern. I believe Tim is going to drop the link in the chat so you can get registered. I believe it's literally only $49 or something, guys. So you want to get in a seat. That's 6 hours of us really diving into a lot of what we're talking about right here, right now, mission, vision, core values, all of that. Okay. So fast forward really quick and go to, okay, now you've decided to exit corporate. And most of my listeners are probably not looking to do that anytime soon. However, again, we have a lot of consultants that listen, and I actually do, I don't know, 10% of who I talk to, they're like, well, how can I go out on my own? How can I be an entrepreneur? How do I do it? But what was the moment where you're like, okay, I'm going to go do this? And you had a lot of other things. She has a real estate portfolio. I want to ask a funny rehab question here in a second, but what was the moment? Like, I want to go out and do this on my own. And then what advice would you give somebody that this is just nagging them every day? You should just go work for yourself. Like, what can we tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. My personality is this, is that I told you I'll sprint and then but I know when it's over. Like, if the passion is not in my belly, and I don't know how to say it any other way, then I know that it's over, and the passion had left. And it's not. I wasn't given UPS what they needed on my potential, and it was overnight. And I think it's because I had, in addition to, this is what contributed. I wasn't in a city that I loved. Newark, New Jersey is awful. You hear my Southern intellect or Southern draw. It's all, and so that didn't work well there. I wasn't happy in Newark. So personally, I was ready to get back to the Carolinas. And that was a big contributor, I think. I missed the South. And on top of that, I just didn't have it anymore. I just didn't. And so that was shock. I had never quit anything. It was the weirdest thing. I was 30, maybe low 30s. And I remember calling my parents about it. Like, what do y'all think? Because I was making more money there than both of them collectively together. And I just wanted to, I can remember my dad, my dad saying, Kelly, if you put as much energy as you've put at UPS and work the hours that you put at UPS, you'll be fine in whatever you choose to do for yourself. He was an entrepreneur, so I got it honest. And that's just the way I felt, because I was, I put in a good amount of hours. UPS runs 24/7, so I was putting in a good amount of hours there, and I was just ready. I think you just know when you wake up in the morning, you dread going somewhere. I was always looking forward. I always look forward to going to work. My scorecard, if you will, or scoreboard was on my desk for our report. I could see my report and be like, hell yeah, we just kicked everybody's butt in the division, if you will. Right. And so I wasn't looking forward to going to work every day. And so I just made a big, 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 big girl decision and left and came back to the South and probably took a little time to figure out exactly what I was going to do. And then I just feel like when you're in harmony with I'm going to call it faith, and I'm going to call it different things. And maybe you don't believe in God or faith, and that's fine. But when you put it out there, It's all of a sudden it just shows itself. So all of a sudden I'm somewhere and I meet a couple that I just go up and talk to, because I just like to talk to people. Right. And they ended up owning a mortgage brokerage shop, and it sounded interesting. I kind of had already had like a financial brain, and I went to work for them for free. And I said, hey, because I had stock options, I had money, I had saved money, I was fine financially. I said, if you will train me, I'll come in your office every day and work for free if you'll just train me. And I'd open the door. I'd be there so early because I was on UPS time and they didn't open till 9, and I'd be there at 7. I cleaned their toilets, I cleaned the little office. I didn't care. Just train me. And so they trained me for about 6 months or 8 months, if I remember right. And then they sponsored me, and I went and opened up my own shop. And then from there, it's just where we went. I was willing to do what, again, that's odd. If somebody told me today, hey, Kelly, can I come work for you for free 10-hour days? just train me. I would be like, heck yeah. Like, yeah. That's odd, right? That's odd. That sounds so easy, but that's odd because nobody does that. And I didn't even know what I was doing back then. But I think in your belly, you know when it is over, and you're not committed and you don't have that insane commitment that it takes to be successful. That self-discipline, that confidence, all the things, maybe something's in your head just to be like, you know what? It's just time to move on.
Yeah. We have some clients that stay with certain organizations way far beyond that burnout knowing point. And then by then, their confidence has taken a severe beating. Because the longer you stay somewhere that you're not happy, the more it chips away at sort of who you are and your self-worth. And I just think when I talk to folks, it's almost like the vast majority of people don't truly believe that like they deserve happiness and fulfillment, you know? And
those golden handcuffs that corporate America, or, you know, when you're making over six figures or even well over that, right? Those golden handcuffs keep a lot of people in places a lot longer than they really need to be. But the freedom of it's not even pressure. The freedom of going and making your own money, and you have, you know, it's again, remember those steps I told you about a supervisor, manager, division? Well, each one of those has a pay grade as well. And so each one of them was capped. Right. And now we don't have to be capped. It's amazing what you can do if you have a passion to do it and surround yourself with those 8 out of 10s to help you catapult you to the levels that you really want to go to.
How many? So, Rehab Wallet has funded over $250 million in loans since 2020. So, man, what an exciting ride that has probably been. But how many 8 out of 10s you got over there?
Out of the 9 employees, I would have to say all of them. I have a 10 out of 10, and I have a few 9s, but the majority is 8s. And
guys, if what Kelly and I are talking about resonates with you as far as like, man, I should start targeting a new organization, I should be opening up this conversation about where I could be happier, I don't want to forget to tell you to visit www.execupgrades.com/podcast. You can book a call with the team to start taking a deeper dive into that. I did not want to forget that, but I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kelly.
No, I was just going to say is that the smart ones and the capable ones, the 9 out of 10s and 10 out of 10s, they would not have come to work if we were just doing 50 million. Our first 6 months, we did 50 million. They probably wouldn't have come to work at that level. They just wouldn't have. That's not a lot of business in the lending world. But you know, our revenue is about 16 million on that amount of business on the loan part of it. But they are so excited for $1 billion. You know, they talk to me about it like, Kelly, or, you know, but let's get to that $1 billion in loan revenue, not revenue, but loan volume. And I can't be in a hurry because I also can't have a ton of defaults as well. So we will get there. But if I just said, you know what, guys, we are where we are, you know, we're not going to grow. We're not looking to grow. I probably lose them.
Yeah, I'd lose them just to stay there. Right.
I just would lose them. I think I definitely, you know, the last thing I need to probably talk to your audience about is that some of you guys don't realize that the COO piece of somebody's business, like I wouldn't know what to do without mine. I just wouldn't. I wouldn't want to do this without her. I've known her forever. We've known each other since we've been kids. At the same time, she supports me, takes everything off me so that I can go do what I do really well. We were college teammates. We just know each other very, very, very well. And on the same token of that, yeah, I pay her a lot of money and she's worth every penny times 10, is that she also is learning how to make money outside of just her salary. And so a lot of you could be COOs for a company and then learn how to watch. Now, granted, she and I are the same age. This is not what she wants to do. But if I had a younger COO that would, you know, could watch me, then can do the same thing that I do and run be a CEO of a company one day at a starting point of a COO. So I think that it is so important that everybody at business owners have these amazing people beside us along the way to have fun and make a lot of money.
100%. I always tell people, not only am I not doing it alone, why would I want to do it alone? You cannot do it alone. We really already tried it, but with some of these C-suite individuals that listen, you know, they're targeting roles that they want to get in and also have stock options, a plan for exiting, whatever, and essentially become millionaires, you know, in their career. So it's just really important though to identify in the beginning, like, where's the company going? Who is it that you're essentially partnering with? And I know it all sounds kind of like, well, duh, Christina, that's communication 101, but it's just so easily forgotten in the conversation somehow.
I want to add something that Angela did with me. And again, remember, I knew her. But when we started talking salary, she had already worked for a big corporate America company for about almost 30 years, 28 years. And she was just done and wanted to do something else and wasn't at retirement age, if you will. And so this stuck out. And we got to remember, we had had 20 something years of not even really being around each other. And so I learned so much about her at a dinner one night that makes perfect sense. When we were talking salary, I literally put it on a little piece of paper and I shoved it over, and it was four of us sitting there. I shoved it to her and she shoved it right back. Like, that's not enough. And so we're changed. I didn't know that was going to be the routine, but what it told me, honestly, it didn't piss me off. It didn't make me feel any negative toward her. It made me feel like she is confident in herself enough to be like, I'm not working for that. And it stuck out to me. And now I know why. It's because she's a very confident woman. And when she walks in the room, it's confidence. It's on a microphone. It's confidence in front of our Teams calls. Confidence in front of our group, our employees. And it started with just that, like, no, I'm not working for that. And we got to a point finally, after about four or five shoves back and forth, that, okay, I can settle that, but that don't, and she said it, this isn't all the money that I want to make. You realize that, right? I'm like, this ain't all the money you're going to make. And so it's not don't be afraid to talk about that. Especially us women. We're horrible at this. Don't be afraid to push that paper back over to somebody that's giving you whatever, a salary choice. Push it back. Be like, no, cross it out and say, no, this is what I'm worth. And this is what I'm going to do to help you. And I promise you that your company is going to be better off because I'm there, and that'll pay for itself times 10 or something like that. Super confident. And then you got to get, then if you get the job, you got to go walk the walk.
Yeah. If y'all are, listen to me, y'all, I've been on this podcast for so too long. I'm going to be talking.
It's awful.
It's rubbing off. But for those of you that when you get in this conversation around salary, if you probably got heart palpitations, you're feeling all flushed about it. Tim did a podcast last Wednesday. It'll be in the episode library of the Executive Career Upgrades podcast with very specific negotiation tactics. So if you're scared to go it alone, like, and you just need some basic skills on how to do that and stand your ground, be sure to be listening to that. And understand your worth, and then it becomes really a conversation. Like, how much more value can I bring to that organization? Being able to demonstrate that value, even just on an ROI, just basic ROI, just like Kelly was saying. So, you want to be comfortable where your starting point is when you take a position, because if you're not comfortable and happy with what you're working for, you ultimately won't thrive in that role. We just see it time and time again. So that's a cool story. A similar story Grant Cardone had with his COO, Sherry Hamilton. She's amazing. So yeah, fun story. Thank you for sharing that with me. So I think I've covered all of my questions. What would you leave the audience with that, you know, the people who I know are listening, they have a deep desire to make a big impact leadership wise. They want to impact people and help people in their career and build teams. And, you know, corporate America really needs that now more than ever. What's one piece of advice that you would leave us with? And you gave us a ton already, but what's one thing you'd like to leave the audience with today?
You know, I guess I'm just going to say it very general is to have fun with your team. Have fun, you know, give the high fives and make things a big deal, because they are. You know, business in general could be very mundane. Like, you know, okay, we have a goal of X amount, 50 loans this month, and we got 50. Okay. But that's hard to do, or 100. That's just hard to do. So we have to make sure that we don't get stuck. And as leaders, that we don't get stuck with just assuming, oh, okay, they're going to do this. We got to have fun. We got to have the Christmas parties. We got to go all out sometimes to remind our employees that they matter more so than just money, that they matter. And it's the simple, you know, just leaving. When Gunner was my trainer this morning, that gave me, he's 25 years old and he got a handwritten note. You know, 25 year olds, I don't even know if they know how to write cursive, you know. So, but he wrote me a note, and we forget to do those small things. And it's small. It's kind of like what you're talking about showing up, Christina. That's so small. It's not even hard. And neither is a note. And little things, I think we just got to keep doing the little things over and over, and don't forget them and don't stop them, to remind our employees that they matter. And because that culture is huge, and those core values that we were talking about that we all, you know, share, and we got to make sure that they understand them. And again, have fun. I don't care what it is, whether it's a big bell that rings, you know, when you get to a certain level, or I don't know, just have a little fun. Angela put out something last week, and it was so cute. It was so simple. And she took a picture of socks on the floor and she sent it out on our team's chat with every employee and me. And I saw it, and she's like, Cassidy, you knocked the socks off of our borrowers this week. And because somebody had called her and said, Cassidy's amazing, blah, 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 right? That was that 10 out of a 10 I was talking about. And so just that simple. Don't overcomplicate things, right? Let's just have fun. Enjoy the time. Remind, maybe a simple little letters, notes, socks, whatever it is, just to make sure that they all know that we're watching and we see you. We see you. We pay them a paycheck. You know, the old school mentality kind of sits in sometimes of, well, they're getting a paycheck and they're paying well. But it's more than that, especially these days. It is way more than that. They have to feel very warm and fuzzy, and that's okay. If that's all I have to do, that's all I have to do.
I love that, guys. And just let's pause there for a second. Like, if you feel like you're not praising your people often, you're not praising them publicly and thanking people, just use this as another reminder. Just nothing's wrong with you. Just bring it to your awareness of I don't care. Maybe you have to put it in your calendar.
Say, exactly. You know, I do. Yeah. So true.
Mm-hmm. And then you'll be able to collect, you make somebody so happy, then you're collecting evidence that while this is working, it starts becoming who you are. These simple things that we can do, because it's decreasing so much generally out there. I think everybody could agree with that. It's a lost art. So when you do, when you do it, it just creates such a, compound effect within the culture. I absolutely love that. Tim got it's kind of like a big wrestling belt, like a Mac Daddy belt. And it says BMF. It's for the sales team. It stands for bad. You guys can fill in the blank for whoever's selling the most at the time, they get the belt, you know? And so we just try to do fun things like that. We have a Slack channel. We like to blow that up. Birthdays, celebrate every little thing that you can celebrate. Brandon Dawson says the only emotion that belongs in business is celebration. Because once you start bringing in frustration, anger, sadness, I mean, we can all agree that that becomes chaotic and it does not move the business forward at all. So thank you again so much, Kelly, for being here, taking the time out. I know how busy you are. And I think I've snagged her for the next event in June of next year that I've been teasing you guys about. Let's see. I look forward to talking to you again pretty soon.
Thank you so much. Tell Tim I said hey.
I will. I'm surprised you guys can't hear him. He's in the next room. He's so loud, Mr. Army over there.
I can't.
All right. Have a good one, guys. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.